John Daly here. You know what day it is? Neither do I. I live life daily. That's why I only spin on Moto Casino. Moto's got daily free bonuses, daily tournaments, new slots added daily. And the best part? Guaranteed daily jackpots. You can't beat that. So today's the day you grip it and spin it with me on Moto. America's social casino. Play for free on Moto.us.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details. Download the Moto Casino app today. Must be 21 plus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hour number three of the DDC here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Elijah Campbell on the ones and twos. Hope you're having a great Wednesday. Let's say hello to Mitch Light from The Athletic as we talk some college football with him. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm good. And Chase, Willie told me that Darren was on vacation. He didn't tell me you were going to be on the air. I don't know if I would have agreed to this, but it's a little late for that right now.
So you're here now. You're stuck with me now. So now I got to make the questions hard-hitting. But I will say this. One thing that is happening right now in college football is making me very, very happy, and that is these conferences are finally getting it right, and they're getting rid of these divisions that I know they created because of geography and because of all the teams they had and yada, yada, yada. I hate divisions, and I'm glad they're going away. The ACC, the latest conference to do that, joining the Pac-12. The Big 12 already didn't have them. And it looks like the Big Ten and the SEC will probably follow suit at some point. What do you make of the ACC's model of the 3-5-5 scheduling model that is going to start in 2023?
Well, yeah, and I agree with you on the divisions. They're basically put in place for championship games. There was an NCAA rule that I think the way it was written that you had to have divisions to play championship games. So it made sense, but that rule's no longer in place. So, yeah, I think if you're going to stay at 8, I think the 3-5-5 works well. A couple of weeks ago I would have said the SEC was going to be at 9. Who knows right now? But, I think it's good. You're always going to have some teams kind of complaining. But, the ACC is so balanced. Clemson's obviously been very good of late. Florida State has the potential. Virginia Tech over its history has been good. But there's so much fluctuation between when these teams being good and bad, like it's hard really to complain about anybody. Like if you get Wake Forest in your schedule right now, you're like, oh man, just our luck, Wake's good now. Well, where are they going to be in 5 years? Duke is terrible right now, but they won the division 5, 6, 7 years ago under David Cutcliffe. So I think if you get like a Clemson on your rotating schedule, that's a tough draw. But other than that, there's not much to complain about. But the big picture, yeah, I think this is the way we're going to be going. And it'll take some time to get used to because I don't, when you guys hear South Carolina, you think SEC East, there's just certain, I just picked them randomly. There's just, we associate teams with conferences and divisions. It'll take a little while to get used to it.
So the ACC, they're basically have three protects. The primary opponents is what they're calling them, but yeah, Protecting three rivalries, so to speak. And, the ACC is a little bit different when it comes to that. I think the SEC is going to have the hardest time of figuring that out, of what rivalries you protect for each team. Would you agree with that?
Yes, no doubt. First of all, there's more rivalries. There's more established teams, more established programs. And I'm just kind of thinking this through as I'm saying. Like, sure, the SEC has expanded, but look at the ACC. I mean, like Pittsburgh and Syracuse, those are relatively new. I mean, how many rivalries are they going to have? They're playing each other. So, like, that's good. But there's less tradition, I guess, in the ACC than the SEC. And no one's going to – you would think no one wants to play Alabama every year. Maybe Tennessee does. I don't know. It's good for the schedule. It's good for the fans. It's not good for your, trying to make the playoff. Obviously, a lot of programs are going to want to play Vanderbilt every year. That's part of it. There's a lot of bickering back and forth. And it's just, we saw Tennessee-Auburn go by the wayside, which was once a great rivalry. That's one thing. We're going to have to get used to some of these games not being played every year. But we adjust. It took me, Willie, you can chime in here, South Carolina and Arkansas joined the league when we were in college. It took me about 10 years to think of South Carolina as an SEC team. Sometimes I still don't.
Well, they don't play like it sometimes.
Yeah, true.
Now, Mitch, looking at the Big 12, now we know that Texas will be leaving, Oklahoma will be leaving. They got a new commissioner. UCF, BYU, Houston, and Cincinnati will be the new members in 2023. Where does this put the Big 12 it doesn't seem to have the luster it used to have.
No, it won't, Derek. And I get into this debate a lot on, with one of my colleagues, Ari Wasserman, on the podcast we do. His point is always like, sure, it's going to be a Power 5 league in name, but is it really going to be judged as a Power 5 league by the selection committee? Now, you could counter that by saying, hey, Baylor has been a very good team. They won the league last year. They won the league with Texas and Oklahoma in it. And Baylor, one thing that they've done is they have been good under three coaches recently, which is very difficult to do. When you judge a program, you're like, does it have staying power? If it's only been good under one coach, you say maybe not. But they've managed, they've made great hires. And it looks like Dave Aranda is there. He's kind of recommitted. You know, Oklahoma State has quietly been one of the most consistent programs in the country, and Texas Tech is recruiting very well. Houston has potential, but I agree with you. It's going to be a very solid football conference, but one without those marquee programs. And, you know, a lot of people judge leagues by how good are you at the top. That's not how you got to judge the Big 12. It's going to be like they might have the most balanced league. It might be a fun league. Every team might go 5-4. But it's definitely going to be lacking in those marquee programs.
Can you see this potentially happening with any other conference other than the, obviously, the Big 12? I mean, not the Big 12, but the Big 10, SEC. Can you see other conferences trying to jockey and position themselves with teams to be up there with the SEC and the Big 10?
Yeah, I mean, we just had this recent round of expansion, realignment, obviously with those teams going to the Big 12. I mean, there's always speculation. I think we are kind of going to be in a holding pattern right now. I think if the next big move, if it ever happens, would be some sort of Power 5 breakoff from the rest of the FBS and, you know, what do you want to call them, super conferences. But I think for the next, I don't know, 8 to 10 years, what we have right now is what we're going to have. But I think down the road, something is going to happen because, like I always say, Alabama doesn't play the same sport as Akron plays. You know, they're in the same FBS, but there's nothing close to what those teams have nothing in common. Now, you could say that about college basketball, too. Is Kentucky playing the same sport as Mississippi Valley State or, you know, some schools in those low majors? Not really, but every school has access, in theory, to the championship in college basketball, which they don't have in college football.
Talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic, college football editor. And so we're hitting him with some summer questions here. And, Mitch, I know you really you mentioned Ari Wasserman. You're doing a lot of work with him, and there's tons of recruiting news here recently. So let's just start with your reaction when Arch Manning committed last week to Texas.
Not surprised at all it was Texas. Was a little surprised by the timing. It was unfortunate for me. I just had made lunch, was taking a first bite in a sandwich, and then I saw on Twitter that he committed, and I like pushed my food to the side and didn't eat for, you know, 6 hours. It was a crazy day. And, you know, he had pretty much narrowed it down to Texas, Georgia, and Alabama, and had gone on official visits. Alabama got a commitment from a guy named Eli Holstein, a top 50 national player from Louisiana, quarterback. So you would think in theory that kind of eliminated the Crimson Tide. So, you know, there just seemed to be so much momentum for Texas. I formed such really good relationships over there, had been there so many times. So I wasn't surprised at all. And it's a huge day for Texas. You cannot, you know, Ari wrote in a column, he's prone to hyperbole sometimes, but he called it the most impactful commitment in the history of the modern era of recruiting. And I looked this stat up. It's the first time, and we call the modern era of recruiting since 2002. That's kind of when Rivals first came out. It's the first time a number one overall prospect has committed to a school that had a losing record the year prior to its commitment, prior to that guy's commitment. So sure, it's University of Texas. We know about the history. We know about the potential. But he's jumping on a program that went 5-7 last year under a coach who still is trying to prove himself, even though it's his third Power 5 job, and a program that's been dysfunctional over the past decade plus. So I think it is a huge statement by Arch Manning and a huge day for Texas.
I always try to look ahead and say, okay, you know, you're going to a good team that you think you can win. There's always going to be competition, especially a quarterback. So what does Texas and the quarterback position look like this year? They've got some high recruits that are sitting there, right?
Yeah. And one thing I do want to say that, I mean, there's a lot of factors why he'd choose Texas, but go back and look at Texas 2022 signing class. It was top 10, I think. But look at the offensive line. I think they signed two 5-star offensive linemen, several other highly rated. So if you're going to be a quarterback taking a chance on a school, you want to see some young elite offensive linemen, and that's what Texas has. So he is joining a program that already has Quinn Ewers. There's been like five players in the modern era that have a perfect recruiting score, 1.000. Vince Young was one of them. Jadeveon Clowney was another. Now, Quinn Ewers had a perfect score up until the last second. Then I think he was like 0.9999. So he was one of the most hyped recruits ever. Remember, he reclassified, went to Ohio State, transferred back. He is a sophomore this year, eligibility-wise, second-year eligibility-wise. So Arch Manning will be joining a team that has one of the highest-rated quarterbacks ever on the roster, who will be a junior when he's a freshman. They still have Hudson Card, who was good enough to be the opening day starter last year. They got a kid named Malik Murphy, who at one point was a five-star quarterback in the class of 2022. He's there. He's hurt now. So there is definitely going to be a lot of competition. But, you know, Alabama signs, well, Eli Holstein's not a five-star, but they sign top 50 quarterbacks every year. We know Georgia signs top 50 quarterbacks every year. So it's going to be interesting. I think if you're Texas, the ideal situation is that Quinn Ewers is as good as advertised this year, plays great, shows Arch, because, you know, remember, he's not going to sign until December, shows Arch that, hey, they're on the right progress, they're making progress, and then Quinn Ewers is the quarterback in 2023, Arch plays as the backup, and then takes over for 2 years. So I would think that would be Texas's ideal plan, but as we know with quarterbacks and transfers and all that stuff, no ideal plans ever come to fruition.
How would you describe the domino effect of Arch Manning going to Texas?
Yeah, it was big. And that's why I think it was important for him to commit early. Like a lot of, you know, we're seeing kids commit earlier more than ever because June official visits have become the big thing. Like it's not really, you know, in the winter now. It's in June. So a lot of kids are committing. But it kind of shows that he's validated what Texas is doing there. He's a kid. And Ari and I talk about this a lot on our podcast. He is one of the, you know, most hyped recruits of all time. He's one of the most talented kids in the country. Just the resources he has financially and with who his family is, he's not going to make an uninformed decision. He's been around. He's talked to so many people. His dad, his uncles, his grandfather, they're not going to let him go somewhere where it's not a good opportunity. I kind of thought about this earlier. I've got a neighbor who's really like tech savvy and likes cars. I don't know anything about cars. I let him do all the research, and then he tells me, like, if that car's good enough for my neighbor, it's good enough for me. Like, that's the way I look at it for, like, recruits. If it's good enough for Arch Manning, it should be good enough for you. I mean, obviously, these kids need to make their own decision. So there's been a flurry. They've had 8 commitments since Arch committed last Thursday. Now, the thing to look at, it's not – just don't look at the numbers. There's been 3 top 500 guys out of that 8, which isn't great. I mean, you need to stack top 100 kids if you want to have a roster that's going to compete with the Alabamas and what Texas A&M is doing, the elite in the SEC. Now, they did get a 5-star kid out of Louisiana yesterday, a safety named Derek Williams, so that's big. So don't just – you'll see headlines like 8 kids committing to since Arch. That's nice, but what's the quality of those kids? You know, they need – I'm sure Texas does its own evaluations and they like them, but – you need to stockpile these top 100 kids. And, you know, we'll see what that happens. We'll see if that happens. But no doubt getting Arch was a huge boost for that down the road.
Mitch, appreciate the time as always. I hope it wasn't too bad for you having me on.
It was okay. I'll leave it at that.
All right. Thanks, Mitch. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Mitch Light from The Athletic joining us as we talk a little college football. I do want to dive into the division thing a little bit because I have been pretty passionate about this for a while and would love to get your guys' thoughts. As you listen to the DDC on 102.5, 106.3, The Game and The Game Nashville app. But first, Willie, you're going to tell us about QC Kinetics.
All right, QC Kinetics, they want to keep people moving. They know that you love to do your thing, whatever that might be, hiking, biking, golf, pick up basketball, all of the above. But if you got joint pain, it can really bring you down and it can limit your activity. And maybe you've hit a dead end because, you know, you're really not looking forward to pain meds or steroids or even surgery. Those things may be not appealing. Here's something you may not have considered. The natural biologics, the regenerative medicine that QC Kinetics provides. It's on the cutting edge. This is an advanced, exciting, natural alternative that can give you lasting relief using your body's own healing power. It's 2022. This is the new way. regenerative medicine can restore and repair damaged joint tissue using those natural biologics. No drugs, no downtime, no surgery. If that's appealing to you, check it out, because this is a free medical consultation that's right here in our listening area. They can address any pain in any joint and improve that quality of life to get you back out there. So call those local medical professionals at QC Kinetics, 615-249-4024. That's 615-249-4024. 615-249-4024 for QC Kinetics.
Listen for the casino sounder today through Friday, and when you hear it, you will text BALLY, B-A-L-L-Y, to 615-737-1025 and be qualified to play the grand prize roulette wheel. All qualifiers will receive a number on the wheel, and the winner will be revealed during the noon hour with the DDC. The winner will then have 10 minutes and 25 seconds to call in to win the grand prize, so you must be listening. A summertime casino getaway to Bally's in Evansville. You must be 21 to enter. Official rules and more information at thegamenashville.com/Bally. Welcome back in to the DDC, presented by Spring Hill Heating and Cooling. Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, a York certified comfort expert company. Schedule now at springhillac.com. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason with you. DMAC with the week off, the rest of the week. So the scheduling in college football. Divisions. I'm so glad divisions are going away. And, you know, as Mitch pointed out, it was the conference games, conference championship games. That's why they did this. But it ended some rivalries. It created new ones. A lot of things happened, but I'm glad to see them go away. Now the question is, how will the SEC handle it? And do we think we have an announcement before SEC Media Days, which is in about a month or 3 weeks, really, is when SEC Media Days will take place in Atlanta this year? I, for one, think we will. I think that that is on the horizon. The ACC, the latest to do it, joining the Pac-12. And I like the scheduling formats that they've come up with. But as we talked about with Mitch, the SECs is going to be a little more difficult.
Yeah, I think, you know, for the ACC, they're able to do it. You know, for the SEC and the Big Ten, I think it's going to be a little bit more difficult. I think you're going to get a little bit more pushback from, you know, each individual team in each conference, division, whether it be the Big Ten West or Big Ten, was it East and West? And it's what the SEC North and South, one of the two. However they
the
break.
East and West. Yeah,
East and West. However they break them up. I think you're going to get some pushback from both, because to me, the way you sort of fix the problem in the Big Ten is you still keep divisions, but you break them up. You know, there's no way that Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State should be in the same division.
I agree. No.
Yeah, they should have broken those divisions up. The ACC, I don't know if they – I think the ACC's pretty much got theirs the way they want it, but it's, to me, it's the Big Ten. There's no way, and you can still keep the Michigan Ohio State rivalry, Michigan Michigan State rivalry, but don't put them both in. Don't put all four of them in the same division.
Well, okay. So look at this from your perspective. Uh-huh. You're Michigan State, mm-hmm. and I tell you, you're going to get three protects. You're going to get three rivals that you can play every year.
Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan.
Done.
Yeah.
That's it. And in the end, it's the same for those other teams. You know, you're going to, if you're Michigan, mm-hmm. you're going to play Michigan State, you're going to play Ohio State, you're going to play Penn State. And that's what you do with it. But for the SEC, I mean, it's, you know, if you're Vanderbilt, mm-hmm. Willie, you're keeping Tennessee, Ole Miss, and Kentucky. Is that how you would do it?
Look, you're going to get a bad answer from me. First of all, I don't like that the conferences are so high, so large that you have this big dilemma, especially in football. Mm-hmm. But to me, I the rivalries are important, but competitive balance is more important for me. I mean, you have to have Ohio State and Michigan, but if you're really being true to a competitive balance league, mm-hmm. you should rotate your opponents, and it's not right. That's why an 8-9 team league is the way to go. or maybe 10.
But Willie, man, I don't know how to tell you
14,
this,
16,
yeah, it ain't
but
going
I,
that
I know,
route.
That ship has sailed, my friend.
These days are over. But you have to sacrifice something. If you're going to bring all these teams in, the schedule doesn't make any sense. I used to remember when Les Miles and I guess it would have been Urban Meyer at the time, but Florida and LSU were sitting there going, look, why is it fair? We got to play each other every year when Vanderbilt plays Ole Miss every year. It just it's not true. It's not right for competitive balance. So I don't.
Okay, but
I don't like that.
You don't like what the ACC is doing.
But D-Mace, you just said it. Okay, Penn State, Michigan, Ohio State every year. That's a really tough schedule. If those are your three,
it's a gauntlet to run through.
And other teams in your league get to play Northwestern, Iowa, and pick another one, Indiana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you would still play those. You would have your three protected rivalries, and then you would rotate through. If you play 9 conference games, you would rotate through 6 more, and they would just rotate every year. So I mean, you're still getting a mix of that.
But there will be a big imbalance. Several years. I mean, every year there will be somebody that gets a much easier schedule than somebody else.
You're saying
how it is in the NFL.
You're saying if the Big Ten with more than 10 teams and the SEC go the route of the ACC, where they're doing a 3-5-5, but you do have your three mainstays every year. These are the teams you're going to play, but then we're going to rotate them. So you say you would rather – you don't want it that way with the Big Ten and the SEC.
No, I don't. I just think if you're trying to have competitive balance and you take for granted, which I do, that Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan, more years than not, are going to be powerful teams. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, it's been proven over the last couple of generations. They're going to be pretty good. If you got to play those three teams every year, you're at a disadvantage.
Well, over the last decade and a half, these have been the dominant teams in the Big Ten. Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State, Penn State, Wisconsin and Iowa,
yeah.
I believe.
But they're in different
yeah, they're
exactly. So think about where Michigan, I'm sorry. Think about where Wisconsin and Iowa, let's just pick those two.
Yeah, they don't have to go through the gauntlet that Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State and
how many
and Penn
times
State
have they played in the Big Ten championship game just because they're in that division?
Exactly. And that's why I said they should, instead of having no divisions, they should just reclassify the divisions.
So
if you're going to do it, then rotate equally. Let's not worry about, and I understand that, you know, I think a lot of people would just, they wouldn't think college football could exist if Michigan didn't play Ohio State every year. So I understand you got to try to work the tradition in there, but if you're really being true and having a competitive league and being fair to everybody, you should rotate.
So you're saying no protected rivalries at all? Is that what I'm hearing you say?
Ideally, that's how you should do it.
Okay, so I'm going to take that.
That's the price you pay. You want all these teams in there? That's the price you pay.
Okay, all right. But let's just agree to disagree on this. Let's agree that ship has sailed. You're going to have 16 teams, whatever it is now. Like, you're going to have all these teams in there. So on your premise of you don't protect a rivalry, I want to know how Tennessee fans feel about that. Because you've had the Alabama side that has said that Tennessee-Alabama is not really a rivalry anymore, which it isn't. I mean, it's been one-sided.
Yeah.
So if you're Tennessee, and then Tennessee's kind of felt that way about Vanderbilt, if you're a Tennessee fan, do you want the three protected rivalries? Do you want the one, or do you want none and do what Willie says and rotate through? 615-737-1025. You can call or text on our phone line, driven by Wilson County Hyundai. .com as you listen to the DDC 1025-1063 The Game and the Game Nashville app. IndyCar is back. Single day tickets for the Big Machine Music City Grand Prix August 5th through the 7th are on sale now. Enjoy racing, live music, and one big party. Visit musiccitygp.com to buy your tickets today. Welcome back into the DDC here on 1025-1063 The Game and the Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Derek Mason talking some college football and divisions in college football. And I asked the question to Tennessee fans specifically because your team had a decent year. You got Josh Heupel now. I think people are expecting with the, you know, the quarterback that they're bringing in that they're going to be even better moving forward. So how do you look at this from a scheduling standpoint if you're a Tennessee fan? Do you want to keep three rivals on your schedule, which if that's the case, it would be Alabama, Vanderbilt, Kentucky for me? Or do you agree with Willie and think because of a competitive balance that everybody's schedule should just rotate every year? I'm going to tell you right now, Willie, that I understand where you're at on that, but it's never going to happen.
No, of course it's never going to happen. It's never going to happen. I understand that. They try to play everything. They try to, you know, they try to have everything, and you can't. And
right.
That's why they shouldn't have ever taken Oklahoma and Texas. It screws stuff up even more than it is now. But to me, there's got to be a little yin and yang. If you want these extra teams, then if you really want to have a competitive league and be fair to everybody, it should rotate.
Would you settle for taking one rival? So Alabama Auburn, the Iron Bowl remains intact. Because see that right
so
there,
Alabama Tennessee's gone.
Tennessee, Florida.
Again, I'm playing your, and that's the other thing. I said for Tennessee, you know, I didn't even leave Florida in there. So Florida's got to be in there. So take Kentucky out. But
you're automatic when you build the league. Automatically, you lose some great rivalries. You can't keep them all.
Sure. And I mean,
Georgia,
I think they
Auburn
know that.
Is a great rivalry. All of these, like, they're you're going to lose more every time you add to the league.
Yeah, you will. But I think. If you're doing this with the – it's harder to do it in the SEC and it's harder to do it in the Big Ten. I think the Big Ten should reorganize their, you know, the East and the West. I just think it's too East heavy because Chase and I looked up during a break. The East has won at least 70% of the championships within the last 10, 15 years with the exception of maybe three or four. So to me, that needs to be reclassified. You need to switch those teams up because it's too dominant. It's too East dominant in the Big Ten. Now, if you look at the SEC, it's a little bit different. Now, we know Alabama, whether they're in the East or the West, it's more than likely they're going to be the number one team. But they're in the West. Georgia's in the East. So you arguably have the two top teams in that conference away from each other so they could potentially meet up in the SEC championship game. But I think you should keep at least, if you want to format it the way the ACC is doing it, you got to keep at least two of the rivals. You have
yeah.
to.
Yeah, and the other part of this too is I get the conundrum that they're in of – protecting rivalries and making a competitive balance and all of that. But the end result, in my mind, needs to be that the SEC championship game is basically a playoff game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the two best teams in the league that are facing off. Because we were talking about this with the Big Ten. I mean, how lopsided is the Big Ten championship game every year?
Always lopsided.
Yeah, because you have Ohio State and Michigan State and Penn State all on one side.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know one of them is coming out of it and one of them is going to win it.
Mm-hmm.
It likely is going to happen. It's kind of been the same way with the SEC that you've had the West so dominant that the East – now, you obviously, this year was a little different. You had Georgia that did their thing, but you have but Alabama, you know, Alabama still is there and – ultimately, it leads to a national championship game between Georgia and Alabama. But I just want to see the two best teams meet in the conference championship. And I think getting rid of divisions is the way to do that.
Even in the SEC?
Even in the SEC.
Because
you're likely going to get outside of Georgia right now. I'm talking about right now. Like, this could look.
But Georgia is the best team.
They are the best team in the East.
And they probably would be the best team or second best team in a whole conference.
I agree.
Okay.
So I'm looking at this right now.
Mm-hmm.
It could look different 2 years from now, especially when Texas and Oklahoma get in there, if they are what we think they're going to be. But, you know, likely with the way things are set up right now, outside of Georgia, you know, you could end up with Alabama, Georgia again, or you could end up with two West teams.
Hey, listen.
Texas A&M?
Jimbo says different. Bro Bible.
Bro Bible.
Bro Bible.
But do the part that you're not talking about, Chase, when you say two best teams. What if my record is 8-1 and your record is 8-1, but I've played the three toughest teams in the league and you've played the three lowest teams in the league? That's what could happen a lot in given years. And I understand that could happen no matter what. But at least if you have a system that rotates with some regularity, then I got nothing to complain about. But if every year I've got to play Alabama, Georgia, and Florida, for example, as my rivals, who your rivals are, is going to make a huge amount of difference in a league that's already tough to win. Now you're adding Oklahoma and Texas, and you're going to say on top of that, I'm going to have a competitive disadvantage just because of who my rivals are? Good luck.
But I don't think that, you know, if you ask Alabama fans, you know, just because they got to play LSU, who's a rival, or Tennessee, who's a rival, in Georgia, no, LSU, Tennessee, and Auburn, I don't think Alabama fans would be like, no, we don't want those rivals anymore just because they're hard, just because they're really, really good. I think Alabama fans would say, okay, so what? We've been playing them. We're going to continue to play them, you know? So they're not going to be as bent out of shape maybe as another team that a Vanderbilt or, you know, I don't know, a Texas A&M who has to play their rivals in there pretty hard, you know, because Alabama feels that regardless of who we play, or Georgia feels regardless who we play, who our rivals are, we're going to be one of the top teams regardless.
Right.
That's how their fan base feel. Now, you might have some other fan bases that teams that are mediocre, they might be mad because Alabama's on the schedule or Georgia's on the schedule every year. But Georgia and Alabama fans ain't going to complain because they haven't complained thus far.
Right.
The other thing I think the league is counting on, the SEC, is at some point the playoff system's going to go to 12 and there will be some at-large opportunities for the SEC by strength of schedule. But it'll be interesting. Let's say you're sitting there at 9-3 and, you know, you finished, I don't know, fourth in the SEC or fifth. But your schedule might be brutal in a particular year. You'd say, hey, we're 9-3, but we beat three top 10 teams. We lost to three teams. Maybe we had one upset, but we had, you know, we lost to two other juggernauts. I mean, they're going to bank on a 12-team playoff. A 9-3 SEC team could get in to that playoff.
And they might be right based on the strength of schedule. And the committee might look at it as, okay, your strength of schedule, even though you were 9-3, your strength of schedule was much better than a 10-2 team that didn't even win their conference.
I think, too, this is another thing that we can debate, is will the league champion have an automatic bid in a 12-team league?
You have
to. Just to make sure that some of those other conferences are taken care of there. I think you got to have that.
Yeah, you would have to. That would be defeating the purpose if you don't have an automatic bid for your conference champion. Are you talking regular season conference champion or?
No, the game, the championship.
However you determine your league
champion.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, the whole regular season conference champion thing to me is irrelevant. Like, if you're going to have a championship game, I mean, that's the one.
Well, it's not. I guess it's not irrelevant if you are 12-0.
Yeah.
And, you know, both teams come in undefeated and playing a championship game. And then the loser says, well, no, I should still have a right to be in a playoff.
Yeah.
I.e. Alabama.
The question is going to be, does it go to a 12-team playoff? Or is there, you know, is it eight teams, but the conferences have like a playoff that basically you have one extra round leading into the championship game? Because I know that's been batted about. of doing that.
And the SEC is not on board with that.
Yeah. I didn't think that, you know, Saban's probably not on board
with
that.
Yeah, little Nicky's not on board with that, man.
I don't know how Jimbo feels about it, but, you know.
Bro Bible.
Bro Bible.
There it is.
Ball game changing, man.
They are. Thank you, Jimbo. You're listening to the DDC here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. You can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. Chris Mason coming up at 1 o'clock. We'll check in with him, talk some Preds with the former goalie and broadcaster as you listen to the DDC on 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Get used to it.
Make sure you join 102.5 and 106.3 The Game and Newton Motor Group this summer to help kids in Middle Tennessee as we team up with Souls for Souls to provide shoes to children experiencing homelessness in Nashville and the surrounding area. With schools coming back, our goal is to raise $20,000, which will provide 1,000 pairs of shoes for kids. But we can't do it without you. So please help however you can by going to thegamenashville.com/shoes. All donations will go directly to Souls for Souls to give shoes to children in Middle Tennessee experiencing homelessness. Let's do some good this summer, and thank you for your help. Go to thegamenashville.com/shoes. Newton Motor Group is a proud sponsor of Souls for Music City. Newton Motor Group, the best car deals in Nashville start at Newton. Welcome back to the DDC. Chase McCabe, Derek Mason, and Willie Donick here with you as we're discussing a variety of different things today. You can weigh in on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. But, Willie, you sent this to the group earlier today. Brian Baldinger on the NFL Network, who does a great job of breaking down different things. He had an interesting comment on Titans rookie quarterback Malik Willis and what the Titans might do with him.
You know, David, the guy I'm really interested in watching is Malik Willis in Tennessee. Oh, yeah. He's the 86th pick in the draft. A lot of people thought that he was underdrafted. And I'm just looking at the Tennessee team. Todd Downey is the offensive coordinator. No A.J. Brown, no Julio Jones. Tight ends are gone. Yeah, there's Derrick Henry. They like to move the ball on the ground. One of three teams in the league last year that ran it more than they threw it. And so, to me, Malik Willis, I don't think he's going to challenge Ryan Tannehill in training camp this year. But I do believe there should be a package for Malik Willis using his considerable skills to be able to run the ball, and not just a runner. He's got the big arm. He's got the cannon. Like, have a package for Malik Willis where he can get on the field, make the defense defend him, make him defend all 11, and another way that you can use him in the offense, get him on the field, get him some reps, and still help move the ball down the field for the Titans. I would expect the Titans to have a package like that, and I'm anxious to see if it comes to fruition.
There you go, Brian Baldinger on the NFL Network. So, Derek, you played in an era where you didn't see that. The backup quarterback was the backup quarterback. I mean, when Steve McNair first came into the league, they didn't have packages really for him. I feel like this is kind of a new thing that offensive coordinators have done, especially because that position has evolved so much. Mm-hmm. And when you have an athletic quarterback, but what would you think about that if the Titans were to design some packages for Malik Willis?
They would do it, obviously, you know, they're trying to win ball games. So every advantage you can get, anytime you can keep a defense off balance, you do it. You know, in 2019 when Ryan Tannehill took over, I don't know if they had too many packages for Marcus Mariota after Ryan took over after what game? Four or five, somewhere around there. I don't think they had too many packages for Marcus
Mariota. They did. They did have a couple.
Yeah, they had a couple, but I don't think it was
until the next year.
Exactly.
Am I remembering this right? The following year, was he still the backup? I'm trying to think. No. I think it was by the end of the year. When they went to the playoffs, they did keep a couple little things.
Little wrinkles.
You saw Mariota come in there.
And I could see, I could see the playoffs because you're trying to, you know, keep teams off balance. I don't know, because it's not like Ryan Tannehill is not a mobile guy. He gives you probably one of the most athletic quarterbacks in the National Football League. So he gives you everything that, you know, that a Malik Willis would give you from an athletic standpoint. I understand that NFL teams are doing it. You know, we saw, you know, most notable, we saw New Orleans do it with their quarterback, Tyson Hill. We saw them do it him.
And Taysom Hill.
Taysom Hill. Yeah.
He was kind of the.
Exactly.
A lot of this.
Yeah. I mean, Cordell Stewart was really the guy that started it all.
True.
Back in the day, Cordell was. But then Taysom Hill was a guy that really sort of brought it back to what teams do. I don't, you know, I'm not in agreement or disagreement with it. You know, to me, it can't just be, okay, your package consists of running the football.
Yeah.
Or it has to be true packages where he's developing as a quarterback, not as an athlete, but as a quarterback. He's developing. And you do give him the ability to run the football if needed. Don't just put him in there for some, you know, run gimmick. Teams have figured that out pretty quickly. Put him in there and do some things from a passing standpoint, too. So it's not like I'm in a disagreement with it, but I just feel, man, Ryan gives you everything that that Willis will give you anyway.
Yeah, I mean, he's mobile, but yeah. How much of it too is the how the option has developed in NFL offenses? I mean, the read option and everything was a very college based, you know, system, and now it's moved into the NFL. You see Lamar and all these quarterbacks that are running it now. So how much of it has to do with that?
I think it does have something to do with that. But to me, it's how do we generate offense in a different way? Because if you look at offenses in the NFL, they're called different things. The plays are called different, but they're all the same plays. How do we generate offense by incorporating something else? I guarantee you, if you put Ryan Tannehill and Willis on, say, a basketball court, Ryan Tannehill would probably be just as athletic as Willis would be, or vice. You know what I'm saying? So it's not like, you know, Ryan Tannehill is Tom Brady as far as athleticism.
Yeah, Joe Flacco, exactly. Or Drew Brees.
No, Joe. No. Joe Flacco was a very athletic player. He was in his career.
But D-Mace, I'm thinking when Lamar Jackson came in, they tried some of that. They would put Jackson in.
But Willis is Flacco, not Jackson. Willis is not near the athlete as Jackson is. No way, no how.
Well, I haven't seen Willis play that much, so I don't know. I'm just looking at a guy that ran a spread, ran something different, could give you a different look. But Flacco was towards the end of his career. Uh-huh. And Jackson offered something different. You're right. There's not as much of a contrast between Tannehill and Willis. But I'm thinking Taysom Hill, there was a big contrast when he would go in there.
Exactly.
Or Drew Brees offered a different dimension. So that's the thing. I just think anytime you could have a layer and it doesn't screw you up, I guess I would wonder what would Ryan Tannehill think of that? Right, is it if Willis is going to come in for a few plays each game, or it depends on the situation?
You know what my answer to that is?
I think Ryan would be okay with it.
You know what my answer to that is?
Rhythm at all, or does that keep him at his best? Is that best for the team?
I'm not poo-pooing that because that's a valid question, but my answer is for Mike Vrabel, the answer to every question has to be, does it make the team better?
Exactly. So I think Ryan – from the outside, he would be okay with it. Now, I don't know what he would think about it behind closed doors or when he goes home to his family.
Be pissed off about it and then do something about it.
But if you're talking about on the outside where we all can see, I think Ryan would be like, okay, yeah, it helps us win, so let's do it.
If he had been a better quarterback last year and not thrown three picks in the playoff game, they probably don't take Malik Willis.
Well, that's not what it's about. What I'm saying is, does this make your offense better? Because, you know, the old adage, if you try to play two quarterbacks, you have none, all of that. I'm saying, can this be something that can be worked in seamlessly so it does make your offense better? I'm not worried about messing with anybody's ego or anything. Teams have tried this. And, for example, the Saints, they felt pretty good about it. They had a Hall of Famer, Drew Brees, and he was stepping aside for plays because Taysom Hill – could go in there.
Well, Drew knew he was the guy. But Drew knew he was the guy. Like, there was no doubt in Drew's mind that, I mean, listen, the only way they're replacing me is if I retire.
Yeah.
You know? I'm not saying, Willie, I'm not saying if they do indeed put a package in for Malik that, you know, that it will not be beneficial. I think it'll be beneficial. What helps them win? What gives them an extra layer of help to allow them to score a touchdown? And if Malik Willis running a few plays, so be it. I don't think it'd hurt, you know.
And he would have to be the backup, or you would be carrying three guys.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's another thing to consider is who is he ready to be the backup if Tannehill gets hurt, and then he's running the full offense. Because Taysom Hill was a wide receiver. He was in the game in other places. Cordell Stewart was as well. That was the beauty of that setup.
Mm-hmm.
But that there are those that think Malik Willis will be the third quarterback this year as he learns the craft and learns the complete package. And in the meantime, Logan Woodside would be your game day second guy.
No, I mean, you're right.
I think it's an interesting topic that's not going to go away. I mean, until we get to training camp, because here's the thing. In the preseason, you're not going to see it because Malik Willis is going to play a lot in the preseason.
And the Titans are not going to give away.
No, they're not going to give away. But September 11th when they play the Giants?
There might be some in there.
I think you will see it.
Yeah.
I think you will see it.
Three quarterbacks active on opening day.
Willis is
the backup.
I think there'll be three quarterbacks on the roster. Now three, unless Malik just blows it away.
Well, with the Saints, they had Drew Brees, Teddy Bridgewater, and Taysom Hill.
Exactly. So they can carry.
But Taysom Hill was playing wide receiver.
Their backup quarterback.
That is also
emergency
true.
Quarterback.
That is also true. We will continue this, but coming up next, Chris Mason is going to join us. We'll talk Philip Forsberg and some other Predators topics with him as you listen to the DDC 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.